Welcome to the Impact Medicom podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Jennifer Brown, director of the CLL Center of the Division of Hematologic Malignancies at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and professor of medicine in the field of hematologic oncology at Harvard Medical School in Boston. In this episode, we catch up with Dr. Brown at the 65th American Society of Hematology annual meeting in San Diego, California, where she recently presented the extended follow-up of the Phase 3 Alpine trial investigating zanubrutinib versus ibrutinib in relapsed refractory chronic lymphocytic leukemia. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, listeners. I'd like to welcome Dr. Jennifer Brown, who has graciously agreed to join us at the 2023 ASH Conference in San Diego to fill us in on the extended analysis of the Alpine study in relapsed refractory CLL, which she presented during the conference. So congratulations on an excellent presentation, and thank you for being here, Dr. Brown.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So to start us off, can you provide an overview of the Alpine study design and the patient population that enrolled in this trial?
Sure. Alpine is a randomized phase 3 trial in a all-comer relapsed CLL population. So the eligibility criteria just required at least one prior therapy for CLL, measurable disease, and a few other standard criteria. So it's really very straightforward for people to generalize the results to their practice. And then patients were randomized one-to-one between continuous zanubrutinib at the standard 160 milligrams twice a day dose and a standard ibrutinib for 20 milligrams daily continuously.
What new data was reported in this updated analysis, and how does it compare to prior analyses?
So previously, we had reported on the primary endpoint was actually overall response rate, and that was evaluated a couple of times and was found to be significantly favoring zanubrutinib over ibrutinib. And so then the PFS analysis was event-driven, and that was triggered in August of last year, 2022. Those data were presented at ASH and published with approximately two-year follow-up for PFS, showing that zanubrutinib significantly improved PFS over ibrutinib. There's always some concern that 2 years may not be quite enough follow-up. So this analysis is with extended follow-up for both progression-free survival and response rate, now with 39 months of follow-up in the entire study population. This is also an important time point because it's now comparable follow-up to what was reported for ELEVATE-RR, which compared acalabrutinib to ibrutinib head-to-head in relapsed CLL, although that was a very different study population of just high-risk cytogenetic patients with lesion 17p11q. The big impact of Alpine really was showing that there was this progression-free survival benefit favoring zanubrutinib over ibrutinib, and that was true at the two-year essentially follow-up. And now with the 39-month follow-up, that effect is sustained. The hazard ratio for PFS is really extremely similar to what it was last year. And if we look at a three-year landmark progression-free survival time point, it was 65% for zanubrutinib versus 55% for ibrutinib. And so, you know, concerns were raised last year and continue to be raised about how much of this is driven by a true efficacy benefit versus is it possible that some patients came off for adverse events and then progressed subsequently? And we know that ibrutinib probably has more adverse events leading to discontinuation than zanubrutinib. And is that what the effect is due to? So I will say, first of all, that in terms of discontinuations from drug, we see that the benefit of zanubrutinib is true both for people stopping for progression, there are fewer compared to ibrutinib, and for people stopping for adverse events, that there are fewer for zanubrutinib than ibrutinib. That was true last year. That's again true this year. But so the sensitivity analyses are mostly designed to try to get at some of those questions. So the one primary sensitivity analysis is to count as events only progressions or deaths that occur while the patients are actively taking study drug. So essentially censoring events that occurred after patients stopped study drug. And so that sensitivity analysis was very consistent with the overall analysis. And we also did sensitivity analyses that censored to take care of patients who'd had recent drug interruptions prior to their progression event, to take care of COVID-19 deaths. Another question that was raised was, could some patients have just changed from one drug to another without progression and not be counted as an event? So then the additional sensitivity analysis there was to censor patients who switched the drug that they were taking. So all of those sensitivity analyses showed very similar effects to what was seen in the overall analysis in terms of the hazard ratio. And so that suggests that the majority of the effect is probably actually driven by a real efficacy benefit with zanubrutinib compared to ibrutinib. And I should say also there's a planned analysis that we did both last year and this year looking at the very high-risk population of 17p deleted patients. And the PFS benefit is even greater in that subgroup than in the overall population. At this update, it was 59% progression-free survival with zanubrutinib versus 41% with ibrutinib. So 18% versus 10% in the overall population. So again, a very strong signal that efficacy is important here in that very highest risk population.
How do you think the updated PFS results will impact CLL practice?
I think that even last year, many people recognized that this was a significant PFS benefit and have started using more zanubrutinib or using zanubrutinib preferentially. I think with the further three-year follow-up and the results still holding up, that that's going to further influence people to choose zanubrutinib, and not necessarily only in relapse. We know the BTK inhibitors are pretty widely used frontline, and so I think people are probably generalizing the data that we're seeing in relapse to frontline, since we're very unlikely to have head-to-head trials in frontline now.
And do you think the overall response results are clinically relevant to your practice?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, I think progression-free survival is more important than overall response. But there are some data that actually, for example, achieving a complete response with BTK inhibitors is potentially associated with better outcome. The MD Anderson has looked at a couple of different patient populations with ibrutinib, and in high-risk patients in particular, they have found that achieving a complete response was better than achieving only a partial response. And so we will also know from some of the combination studies with chemoimmunotherapy from some years ago that patients, for example, in Helios, who continued to improve their response even after the chemotherapy part, had ongoing improvement in outcome relative to the control arm. So while we don't necessarily think that the response rate data are as important, it may be the case that there's some correlation between response rate data and outcome, even with BTK inhibitors. We may also be seeing that in the ELEVATE-TN trial with the addition of obinutuzumab to acalabrutinib that presumably deepens, we know that it did deepen response and result in more undetectable MRD, and it's translating into quite a progression-free survival benefit. So I think that probably the response rate data do have some impact, but it's not as significant as progression-free survival.
And so now talking about safety, there are several differences in adverse event rates between ibrutinib and zanubrutinib. Which differences are the most clinically important?
So the cardiac side effects are really, I think, the most significant, and we really see quite a difference favoring zanubrutinib in that case. In terms of cardiac deaths, there were none with zanubrutinib, even in this update, and there are still the six with ibrutinib, which is 1.9%. So that's quite significant. There are fewer cardiac adverse events, fewer cardiac reasons for discontinuation with zanubrutinib compared to ibrutinib. And the atrial fibrillation rates continue to be better with zanubrutinib at 7% versus 16% with ibrutinib. So to me, that's really the side effect that I'm very much most interested in when we look at BTK inhibitors. Bleeding is another important side effect. My impression of bleeding is that it's fairly similar across all of the BTK inhibitors, and that is what we more or less see in Alpine. People have been worried about neutropenia with zanubrutinib, but in fact, neutropenia is pretty balanced between zanubrutinib and ibrutinib and Alpine last year and this year. Hypertension is another one that's come up. And in Alpine, hypertension is similar between zanubrutinib and ibrutinib, and that continues to be true at this update. The rates of hypertension with zanubrutinib are somewhat higher in Alpine than they were in other zanubrutinib studies. We don't really have a good explanation for that, but that is something that we observe here. Infections are pretty similar, although there's actually, in this update, somewhat more COVID with zanubrutinib compared to ibrutinib. And we don't have a great explanation for that, but it does seem like most of the imbalance is actually in the most recent year. Like it was pretty even in the first few years of therapy. And so it's in this most recent year that people are on therapy that we're seeing that. So it's possible it has to do with more people staying on zanubrutinib longer. And there's not an imbalance in severe COVID, though. COVID is the most common cause of AE-related death on the trial, but it was pretty similar and slightly less with zanubrutinib than ibrutinib.
And how did the results from the study help solidify the placement of zanubrutinib in the CLL treatment landscape?
You know, I think the results of this study really are pivotal in terms of solidifying where zanubrutinib is in CLL. This is the only head-to-head study of BTK inhibitors in CLL that has shown a benefit in efficacy. Elevate RR showed a benefit in safety, which we also see here, particularly with cardiac safety. But here we see a substantial efficacy benefit. 10% improvement in progression-free survival at 3 years is significant.
So what would you say overall are the limitations of this Alpine trial design?
One question that's been raised is this was not a blinded study. So did that in any way impact the results? I will say that we really don't do very many blinded studies in CLL. It's often obviously logistically more complicated. And I don't really think that that is actually an issue. Our patients do very well. And I don't think patients who are doing well on a drug would be changed just because of an opinion about the nature of that drug. I think one other issue that comes up is that our head-to-head trials with ibrutinib are all in relapse disease rather than frontline disease. And it's possible there's more heterogeneity of the patient populations, even within a trial, but certainly between trials, than there might be frontline. So I suppose we could say the fact that we don't have this trial or others in frontline is perhaps a limitation. Although personally, I am more or less willing to generalize the results to frontline.
Okay. And what other questions maybe remain unanswered? I know you mentioned that you would likely extrapolate this data to first line setting, but how do we consider selection of zanubrutinib versus other BTKIs?
Right. So, you know, I think the main concern that's come up with respect to the selection of acalabrutinib versus zanubrutinib has to do with the hypertension that we've seen in Alpine, because in the Elevate RR trial, there was significantly less hypertension with acalabrutinib compared to ibrutinib, whereas in Alpine, we're seeing similar hypertension with zanubrutinib to ibrutinib. The question of whether this is a real difference or not, I think, is still in my mind something of an open question that might have to do with just the vagaries of the patient population. Clearly, we're seeing quite significant cardiac protection with zanubrutinib compared to using ibrutinib. And the rates of hypertension that we're seeing are not interfering with that, which has been posited by some that perhaps those things would travel together. And we're clearly not seeing that here. My personal view is that they don't actually travel together necessarily with BTKs. Unfortunately, we're never probably going to have a head-to-head trial of acalabrutinib versus zanubrutinib to resolve this hypertension issue. So we're going to need to follow up on the sum total of the experience with the drugs, as well as real-world studies to try and get a better handle on that. Right now, I am not using the hypertension issue as a reason to choose acalabrutinib over zanubrutinib. I find the efficacy data more compelling. So I've been using zanubrutinib. Although sometimes if I want to use obinutuzumab, I will use acalabrutinib obinutuzumab in particular, because those data look so good from ELEVATE-TN.
Yeah, thank you so much again. I think that's all the time we have here, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you. You too.